Every single day I feel the
Artlist.io.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never know I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Every single freaking day I feel the pressure, baby. It's your boy C-Rock. That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. We're back live here. You know, I want to thank all the listeners, or if you're watching this, however you're consuming this content, I want to thank you for being here today and every other day that you're here, and how you share this out to your friends, family, coworkers. I really appreciate it. Please continue to do so, because we're going to continue to bring you great guests with great stories to inspire you and remind you that you're unstoppable, to live in the life of your dreams. So today I got Michael Chernow in the building. He's in his own building, but he's in this building in a way, virtually. NYC born and raised, Michael Chernow has made his way out of the depths of drug and alcohol addiction to an NYC celebrated entrepreneur of the Meatball Shop and Seymour's Restaurants. He opened a combined 13 restaurants and has successfully exited both businesses. Now, in his early 40s, he is a serial entrepreneur, father, husband, and wellness expert, but also a friend of the show, because when you appear on here, you become a friend of the show. Mike, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Excited to be here.
Yeah, dude, do you go on as a guest on podcasts often?
I do, man. I really enjoy being a guest on podcasts. I mean, I have my own podcast, so I really appreciate when people come onto my podcast. But I have really learned over the years that the best way to be a great podcaster is to be a guest on other people's podcasts.
100%.
So, yeah, I go on a lot. I go on a lot of podcasts because A, I enjoy it. B, I'm able to share a message that I believe in wholeheartedly, to be my message just in general in life, and sort of helping people to understand that anybody can change at any time, no matter what. And we're taught young growing up. We're not taught, but it's kind of from my experience, people say this often, it's hard to change the spots on a leopard's back, right? Like, people don't change. And I wholeheartedly disagree. I'm a living, breathing example of someone who is a criminal and a drug addict, and now I'm a happily married father, husband, business owner, fitness dude. You know, life couldn't be better. So,
yeah. Wow, man. So now I got to ask you the question. You can answer this esoterically, literally, however you want to, but I got to ask you, what comes to mind when I ask you, what are you made of?
Discipline. Period. Discipline. I am a man who knows that I can do what I say I'm going to do. And I do it. And that, I think that ultimately is, you know, that's the fabric that I'm made of, is discipline.
You know, listen, so first of all, discipline leads to great things, right? If you're disciplined on the right things. But was a kid, I don't know about you, but I used to have friends, and my stepdad, who became my father, was like a disciplinarian, right? He never hit us or anything like that. But that's how we would think. Like, when we hear discipline, it would have a negative connotation to us as a kid.
It still does.
Yeah. But as we're getting personal development, working on ourselves and all that, we start to realize discipline is the key to success, man. You know? And so I love that answer. I love that answer because I'm 47 years old. I was in the gym today and I was pushing the limits, man. And, you know, when I was done, the trainer said to me, "I got to scale this back for my next client." And I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's what I want to hear. But it's got me so far, and I love that answer. So I got to ask this question real quick. Go back to the podcast guesting for a second. What is one relationship that sticks out to you, not just from your show, but like when you were a guest on shows? What was a relationship that sticks out to you that you got from being on their show, and then it developed into something, blossomed into something else?
Lance Armstrong for me I went on The Forward, which is Lance Armstrong's podcast. He has become a really good friend, a guy that, you know, I feel I have we're kind of kindred spirits. He and I really just connected. It was totally unexpected, but I was introduced to Lance, and then I was down in Austin, and we hung out, we worked out. And then before I knew it, you know, I was on the podcast, I had him on my podcast, and, you know, he invested in my company. I'm now, The Creatures Habit podcast is actually in the We Do Network umbrella. So yeah, that's a relatively new one. But I will just say this in response to that question in general. This has been my sort of philosophy. at first around business, but ultimately found out that this is like my, this is attributable for any venture. But I say the business of business is relationships. The foundation of relationships is trust. Period. Done. The business of business is relationships. There's a lot of people that I know that are wealthy that believe everything needs to be run off a piece of paper and a P&L. And what I've learned over the years in business, because I've founded, built, created value, and exited multiple businesses already at this point in my life. If there's not substance and culture and relationships, like, they gotta like you. They gotta like you to want to stick around long term. You know, it's like, just because a piece of paper says that, you know, this plus this equals that, and if you keep doing this plus this, it's going to equal that, is just absolute BS. That's my experience. You know, they got to walk in the door of your establishment, or they got to put on the headphones and listen to your podcast, and they got to like you. They have to like you. And that is how relationships build. And ultimately, relationships, great relationships create great relationships, create great relationships. You know, you just said it before we even went on live here. You're like, man, like, we're all about networking. And networking is a sort of a fancier way of saying developing relationships, man. I am a relationship guy, period. Like, to my core, that is who I am. People ask me about a superpower. They're like, oh, what's your superpower? My superpower is my passion and desire to connect with human beings at scale. Like, that's what I love to do. That wakes me up in the morning. I want to do it as much and as often as I possibly can. And that doesn't mean that everybody's going to be my best friend and in my, you know, close-knit crew. But, like, the more people I get to connect with and the more people I get to know, just, like, the doors open, you know.
Yeah, dude, let me tell you something. We're so aligned with this. I wake up every morning obsessed. And when I have a Saturday or Sunday where I don't have a lot of calls or podcasts, I feel it. Like, it hits me in my spirit, man. It's crazy. I was in Nashville this past week, and I was around people live, which is great. But when I was by myself and I didn't have my calls that I usually do, the connections that I usually do, it hurt me. I mean, I was feeling it. So I was hanging out, and I want to talk to discipline and trust, those two words. You just mentioned those two words and how they're linked together. I was in Nashville at John Daly's event, and we're hanging out with country singers and John Daly, and it was like 100 people or so, and Major League Baseball players, their age, like, all just great, phenomenal people. And some of the people were people that played songs that I love. And then I didn't know they were going to be there. And I run into them, I'm like, holy shit, this is crazy. You know, and I'm not starstruck, but I'm just like, how did I get here? But when you have those relationships, the discipline comes in, because if you don't do what you say you're going to do, trust doesn't come. And trust is imperative in relationships. So discipline leads to trust, leads to better relationships. So, dude, I love it. There's no, you know, secret to the success other than that, the success you've had. And you're also talking about transactional business versus transformational business. And nobody likes transactional business, you know? So that's, I love what you're saying there. What are your thoughts on the discipline and trust connection?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you alluded to definitely the trust within a relationship between humans, multiple humans. For me, I agree with you 100%, but I really believe, you know, I kind of, when I think about personal development and growth, and I've spent a lot of time there because I've needed to, right? Like, I was knocking on death's door almost 20 years ago. You know, I've been clean and sober in recovery for, August will be 20 years, but there was 10, 11 years of my life where I was just a recluse, degenerate. And I was a kid, but still it was terrible. What I learned through coming out of that is doing what you say you're going to do and actually fulfilling it personally, in my opinion, is far more important than doing what you say you're going to do and having other people see that. Because if you lie to yourself consistently, you say you're going to do something and you just don't do it, that ultimately is the crux of lack of confidence. When you say you're going to commit and you don't commit over and over and over again, your confidence gets deflated to the point where you've got no confidence, no self-respect, and there's no shot. Courage is a part of your life. So I believe that doing what you say you're going to do, committing, The commitment builds confidence, and then confidence ultimately builds courage. And the goal is courage. In any journey forward that could potentially have a greatness piece to that requires courage. People write about courage. They don't write about the people who jumped ship, you know? And so I have learned that the way I've built confidence in my life before I was able to take steps into the courage arena, the way I built confidence in my life was really to understand that, like, I have to stop lying to myself. I have to stop lying to myself by saying I'm going to do shit and then not doing it. And then the rule that I have personally is I could think about things all day long. I could think about doing things and then, you know, negotiating whether or not I'm going to go for it or not. But if I say I'm going to do something, that leaves my lips, that leaves my mouth to another person, or even out loud, just like by myself in affirmations. If it leaves my mouth, I'm doing it. Done. Unless there's like a catastrophic thing, right? Like I wanted to get to the CrossFit Games about a year and 9 months ago. I was like, all right, man, I'm done with bodybuilding. I competed. I became a pro in bodybuilding. I decided that I was kind of done with that because my wife was like sick and tired of the nutrition piece. And I was like, all right. And I said, all right, man, I'm getting into CrossFit. I'm going for this. I'm going to compete in the CrossFit Games as a master's athlete. And I went hard for a year. I was like, I got really strong. I got really good. And then blew my back up. Couldn't walk for almost 3 months. And I had to make a call in that state. I said, dude, you committed. You gave it all you got, and you learned that you may be a little too old for this sport to compete at the level you want to compete at.
Right.
And I, you know, I was okay with that, you know.
Yeah.
But that commitment, confidence, courage thing is massive. It's massive.
Yeah, Mike. Can I call you Mike or Michael?
Yeah,
my name is Mike too. My last name is Scirocco, so my friends call me C-Rock. So that's. My last name is a long Italian name.
I like C-Rock better than Mike.
Yeah. Well, there's so many Mikes out there, you know.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I could play this game with you all day today, right? The words that you're using, right? I have this thing where it's like, okay, now we have courage, and courage leads to confidence. Another C word. Like, we can do this all day, right? But like, confidence is part of this. So what I want to do though is I want to get into your story, okay? And you know, obviously we can blame things for being in the drugs and drinking and stealing stuff and all that. But there is something that built up that led to that, right? So what kind of, like, what's your story? Everybody's got a story. Where did it all start back in the day, whatever?
Yeah, I grew up in New York City. I grew up in Manhattan. My father was an electrician that focused on sort of lighting. And my mother was a secretary. My father was a real tough guy. He's a real tough guy. And, you know, he was not meant to be a parent. And so my relationship with my father from a very young age was tough, man. He would beat the crap out of me and to an extent my sister, but he was very, very bad to my mother and me. And I don't blame that. I don't blame him for why I used drugs and got into drugs and alcohol. I did it because I wanted to do it, you know, but from a young age, I really wanted to escape. And that meant going to other, finding friends I went to a big public school. There was lots of kids. And so I was able to kind of, and my mother knew that it wasn't really safe. I didn't feel safe in my apartment. It was four of us in a 600 square foot, one bedroom apartment. I shared a bedroom with my sister. And, you know, we weren't poor, but we were definitely not like going on vacations, you know. We never went out for dinner. It was a lot of chicken cutlets at home, and we never sat around the dinner table ever, not even one time that I can remember to have dinner as a family. But I escaped and began, you know, I got into sports early because I was put into after school programming because my mother worked and my father didn't give a shit. So he never came to pick us up, and my mother had to work until 7 o'clock at night. So I was always in an after school program, which was typically sports, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, whatever they could get me into. And I stayed at friends' houses as often as possible. My mother was okay with it because she knew that it was rough for me at home, even you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. And I remember very clearly in like first and second grade, I had a friend named Ross Delafield. And this is how I built my street smarts and my sort of EQ. I remember sitting at Ross Delafield's apartment on 79th Street between 1st and York Avenue. He was my good friend. His dad was awesome. His dad, Danny Delafield, used to take Ross and I to the Central Park and go climb the boulders and shit. And I remember saying to myself in his apartment, man, I really got to make sure that Danny likes me. I got to make sure that Ross's dad likes me, because if he likes me, I'll be able to sleep over here. So I got to just be the good kid. I got to figure out how to make sure that this works in my favor, because I don't want to be home. And that kind of thought, that kind of thinking really, you know, it's sad that I had to think that way, but I'm grateful for it, because really what it did for me was it really helped me to acclimate to my environments, right? Like I say it often, you could put me in the slums of Rio de Janeiro in the barrio, and you could put me at the White House, and I am going to make friends quick, you know, like anywhere in the world, in the jungle of the Amazon, like before you know it, I'm hanging out with those dudes, you know, and that is something that I'm very confident about. And I think it has a lot to do with my childhood. So anyway, I kind of escaped into sport, escaped into sleeping over at friends' houses. Unfortunately, it, and this is something that I'm starting to share a little bit more about now, because I think it's important to share about. I was molested by my Cub Scout leader and my sports coach, because he predicated on kids that had broken homes. And I didn't know what was happening at the time. But as I got a little older into my later teen years, I realized what had happened. And it really, really fucked me up in those years. Now I've kind of come to terms with it. But it still fucks me up, you know, that I was molested as a kid, and come to find out that 82,000 other men have come forward in this sort of Cub Scout, Boy Scout, kids getting molested situation. So I dealt with that. You know, I was sleeping out. I was sleeping at the ice hockey rink once I got into playing hockey at 11, 12 years old. Ultimately, I found drugs. And by the time I was at the end of my freshman year of high school, I was full-fledged using drugs all the time. And I found out that I could make a lot of money selling drugs. And so by the end of my freshman year of high school, I was basically the guy at my high school. And there was 2,000 kids in my high school in New York City. And I was, you know, and that gave me the confidence to believe that I could be on my own. And I also got a job. You know, I've always wanted to work. I've always wanted to make, do, create. I was delivering videos. I was delivering food for a restaurant, but I fell in love with working in restaurants. And so I got a job full time, like basically full time after school working in restaurants. I worked in restaurants all through high school. And I also sold drugs all through high school. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 15. And I was just a maniac kid running the streets of New York. Sports fell to the wayside. And my life was about basically partying, making money, and figuring out somehow, some way to stay in high school, which I did, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, the child services got involved in my parents' situation, in my home, because the cops were showing up a lot. My father and I really got to the point where it was a mess. You know, we were going to hands often, and cops would, our neighbors would call the cops. Child services got involved. They told my mother, at a certain point, like, hey, you got to either get the hell out of here with these kids, or, you know, that I'm going to take your son into foster care. And once I got threatened with that, that's when I was like, all right, I'm out. There's no, I know you're not leaving. And she was scared for her life, honestly, my mom. Right. And so I knew she wasn't leaving. And then I just took it upon myself to say, all right, see, I'm out. And so I kind of lived that way all through high school, and I was crazy, and I got into a lot of fights, and I was doing really stupid shit and getting involved with all the wrong people. And you know, pistol whip, duct tape, thrown into my bathtub, robbed, like just all sorts of bad things were happening to me. And I couldn't figure out. I thought it was where I lived. I thought it was the people I was hanging out with. I had never put one and two together that like all this stuff was due to my decision-making process. Like everything that was happening in my life, nothing positive was happening at that point. And it was all based on my decisions, everything. So I don't blame anything that I did on anything that happened to me as a kid, because I was the one in the driver's seat making those calls. And finally, you know, I was 23 years old. My drug addiction and alcoholism sort of migrated from, you know, drinking and doing cocaine to heroin. And it was the end. It was like the last 6 months that I was using. And I, you know, found this girl that I had met was beautiful, and she was also using heroin, and we kind of held each other hostage, and it was terrible. But ultimately I overdosed on heroin in July of 2004. And this girl that I was with was terrified, didn't want to call the ambulance. I thought my life was over. I was like coming in and out of consciousness. I was like, that's it. I'm dead. I know what's happening to me. And she dragged me into a bathtub, threw me in the bathtub, turned the cold water on, the shower. And the shower was just splashing me in the face like ice cold water. And luckily I came to, man. And I was like, God saved my life that day. Gave me another chance. And I still couldn't figure out how to stop. So 2 weeks, you know, I went 2 more weeks still doing the same shit, even after I swore to God. And this is where that do what you say you're going to do piece comes in. I swore to myself, leaving that apartment in the East Village that day, saying, man, this is it, dude. I cannot believe you've let yourself get this far. How could, and you know, how could you do this? Like, you are a good guy. You're a good guy. You got friends, you know, like people like you. You're killing yourself, dude. Everybody knows you're dying. Anyway, 2 weeks of debauchery left in me. And then finally, one day, I slept through work. I blacked out. I wanted to kill myself the night before. Literally, I was like on the verge of jumping out the window. And moment of grace. I picked up the phone. My boss fired me. My job was like, I was bartending in this restaurant. My job was kind of, you know, everything for me at that point. It was the only thing tethering me to life, any sort of reality in life anyway, you know. And he was like, dude, I can't watch you die on my clock. This has happened way too many times. Like, you're a great guy. Everybody loves you, man. But you've got a serious issue that you need to address. And I just can't. No more. I begged him for my job. He was like, look, dude. This guy was catalyst to helping save me. But he was like, I cannot allow you to bartend in this restaurant. If you get sober starting today, if you get sober and you show up here at 8 o'clock in the morning to clean the restaurant with the porters, I'll think about giving you your job back. But if I find out that you have a single sip of alcohol, a single pill, a single sniff of anything, if you put anything in your system and I find out about it, because I will, because I know fucking everybody you hang out with, you're done. And that was that, man. I made a phone call. I called a friend who I knew was in the recovery world, and she introduced me to two guys that were these tough Muay Thai kickboxing dudes, and they kind of swooped in. They were 10 years older than me, both of them. They're still very good friends of mine, and they showed up. They showed up, and they listened to my story, and I was done. I was completely a shell of a human being. And these guys really helped bring me back to life. And, you know, they wrote me a plan, and that plan had to do with fitness and nutrition. And that was the beginning of the rest of my life. And I'm grateful beyond, you know, I can't. If you took a picture of me on August 1st, 2004, and a picture of me now, today, and said, okay, we're taking wagers. How much money you want to bet that guy becomes that guy? Nobody would bet a dollar. They'd be like, the biggest gambler in the world would be like, no way. Look at that guy. No shot. And sure enough, man, you know, I just started. I started to do what I said I was going to do, and understood that commitment is everything, and commitment leads to confidence, and then confidence leads to courage. And I've applied that to everything else in my life, to fitness, to nutrition, to marriage, to fatherhood, to business, to everything. Everything I now know starts with the ability to commit. Everything. Anything great requires commitment, period. That's it. And commitment is also known as discipline. And when you can continue to tell yourself the truth over and over again, I'm going to do this and I do it. I'm going to do this and I do it. I'm going to do this and I do it. And I'm going to do this and I, and that confidence starts to come. And then that the bigger commitment starts to come. Once those bigger commitments start to come, man, you'll be the first one to jump off the cliff because that courage is like there, you know, the courage is there. And for me, you know, I honestly believe that there's nothing I can't do that I put my mind to and I commit to. I mean, I probably cannot get into the NFL or the NBA or the MLB right now. But if I wanted to be a surgeon at 43 years old, if I was like, you know what, fuck it. I want to be a surgeon. I'm going to take the next 15 years of my life. I'll be 58. But at 58, I'll be slicing and dicing, you know, saving lives. I believe it, right? There's nothing we cannot do that we put our mind to. And it all starts with telling yourself the truth.
Yeah, dude, a lot to unpack there, man. Like, well, and the other thing is after that commitment, you have to be willing to give something up or whatever it takes to get it. Most people aren't, you know, they'll commit, but then they half-ass commit because they're not willing to give up those 15 years, say, or all the shit that you have to go through when you're opening up a restaurant and then scaling that restaurant to several restaurants. Like, what is it going to take, you know? And they're not willing to. So, but let me go back for a second. And I appreciate you sharing and being vulnerable. I know it's not easy all the time. And the first couple of times you do it, you're like, do people really care about this shit? Like, I've been there before. How did you come to grips with your self-worth after you realized you were abused? And you know, and what's really helped you through that?
You know, it's interesting. Like when I found out I was like probably like 15, 16 years old when it really started to like click that like, oh shit, this guy was not like just being nice to me and taking, you know, and there was other kids involved, like taking us to fishing trips and, you know, great adventure and doing all these things with us. This guy was like putting us all in the shower and like rubbing soap all over our bodies and, you know, sleeping in bed with us. And, you know, I mean, I don't recall ever having like severe molestation where I was raped or, you know, orally raped or anything like that. But there was a lot of touching and naked boys in the bathtub. And when that, I was like, wait a second, like that happened. And that was like sort of in like the beginning of like a really, really intense time with me where drugs were like, I was deeply addicted to drugs, all kinds of drugs. And I began to plan his murder for me. I was like, I'm going to murder him. I'm going to stake him out. I know where he is. I'm going to wait for him. And then I'm going to beat him to death. Like that was a thought in my mind for about a year. And I didn't tell anybody because I was ashamed, obviously, you know. And then I don't know exactly what happened, but I remember I was talking to, I kind of remember telling somebody, you know, that's kind of what that had happened to me and that I was planning on doing something really bad like that. And the guy that I was talking to said, oh, you know, I've also been molested. And it just completely disarmed me where I was like, wait. Okay, so this happens, you know, like this isn't just me. I didn't ask for this because, you know, of course, like the shame, like when you realize, oh my God, like this happened for like 2 years, 3 years as a little kid, like, did I want this? Do I have to question my sexuality? Is this something I was asking for? I remember really liking that guy, like thinking of him as like a dad. Man, like what's going on? Like, you know, it was really, really confusing and scary for me. So I think, you know, just ultimately, like I really began to do work on it once I got sober. And I have there's no shame. It still haunts me, to be honest with you, but I have no shame around it anymore. And the dude is dead. So he died. But if he was alive, I would probably face him and I would forgive him. Because I just know, like, holding on to a resentment is only affecting me. Someone said to me once, you know, resentment is the dark room where we develop our negatives. And I was like, man, like, I get that.
Good shit.
So holding on to that resentment for me is like, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. As a matter of fact, I was wronged, and now, I mean, the cat's out of the bag, man. The Boy Scouts of America, Cub Scouts of America, man, that is a very, very, anybody who's listening to this with children, I just want to be very clear, like, do your diligence when it comes to putting your kids into volunteer programs. I'm not saying they're all bad, by the way. Like, my kid, you know, I've got two sons. You know, I'm obviously the guy who always raises his hand to coach, because I'm like,
me too, yeah.
Same I got thing. Some history here. Yeah. But, you know, my kids are in programs that there's other people, and I'm not like totally, you know, nervous. My wife is like, all right, chill out. And I'm like, I'm going to research that dude, because I just want to know. I want to know. So I would just say, hey, do your diligence, because it's not like a one-off thing. That stuff is real. Pedophilia is a real thing. I have no idea how to like classify it, right? They say, oh, it's a disease, it's a mental illness. I'm like, great. All good. It's still the fucking worst thing you can do. Like, I don't care if it's a mental illness or what.
Yep.
I'm not saying kill them all. I'm just saying, do your diligence before you put your children into a program where there's volunteers in the adult sector to work with kids, because it's a magnet for those people. You know, and so I'm cool with it today. It's, you know, it's definitely something. If there was anything that I, you know, people ask me, do you have any regrets? Like, would you change anything? Like, that would be the only real thing that I would change, that happening to me, because man, like, that was like real. I was really taken advantage of, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know what it taught me, you know,
right.
Like,
right.
The what's drug the abuse, lesson? All the violence that I experienced as a kid, like that taught me a lot. That taught me a lot how to get through the world. I don't know what getting molested taught me, you know?
Right. Thanks again for sharing, man. I mean, like I said, there's probably people I know for a fact listening that have been through this, and maybe they can take a different perspective of it and help them have a better life from it, you know? So Mike, as we're winding down here, I need to ask you this question now. Let's shift focus here to business, entrepreneurship. What's got your attention right now? What's got you fired up right now when you wake up in the morning? And what's the vision from here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm building my company, Creatures of Habit, which I launched about 2.5 years ago. It's a lifestyle and wellness brand. So I've transitioned out of the brick and mortar world, out of restaurants, and the restaurants are still open and doing well. But wellness has become just like the sort of the cornerstone foundation structure of my happiness. And so I said, man, the next thing I do has got to be in the world of wellness. And so I launched this brand called Creatures of Habit. I believe in habit, you know, and habit is commitment, you know, and I'm a real creature of habit. I find something that I like and it works for me and I stick to it and I don't change. I don't allow things to influence my commitment to things, right? Like, people can say, you know, I've got a very structured morning routine, super structured, big morning routine. I believe in it. It's necessary for me. And 3-4 years ago, everybody was like, morning routine. Now everybody's like, oh, morning routine. You're one of those guys. Oh man, just like, did you have to do all those things? And I could easily be like, oh yeah, they're right. Like, why am I doing all this shit? Do I need to wake up at 5? Do I need to do my prayers and pushups? And do I need to go on the cold plunge? Like, nah, I don't. It was a fact. And I'm like, no. That's what gets me right. That's what I need to do that. And so I am a real, you know, creature of habit. And so I said, I need to create this business. And so we launched the business. I've been eating this oatmeal. Those two guys that came into my life when I was getting sober, those two Muay Thai guys, they told me to eat oatmeal every morning. And they were like, it's easy, it's accessible, it's healthy, and you can find it anywhere. And so you'll never have to go with an unhealthy meal ever if you start your day with oatmeal. And so for the last 20 years, I've been eating oatmeal every single day, and I've added shit to it over the years, seeds and protein powder. And when the pandemic hit and I knew that I wanted to do something in the world of digital wellness, I said, man, like, I've been eating this oatmeal concoction for years. It's the first thing I put into my body every single day. It fuels me up. It fills me up. And I've been doing it for so long. Like, if I could take all that and put it into a pouch, encapsulate my morning first meal with my supplements, I think I've got a product to sell and a story to tell. And now I'm sitting on your podcast telling my story because I created this business that's given me this opportunity to really build a platform around, hey, anybody can change. You never know where it's going to come from. I promise you, anybody can change. And so we launched the business in August of 21. We've been around for 2.5 years. It's going really well. We sell the product as Meal One, which is that oatmeal product. It's gluten and glyphosate free oats, 30 grams of plant-based protein. It's got chia seeds, flaxseed, pumpkin seeds, pink Himalayan salt. We add vitamin D3 to it, probiotic and digestive enzymes, and it's made overnight. It's so easy to make. It takes a minute to prepare. Put it in the fridge overnight with some almond milk. You pull it out in the morning and you just eat it. And it's like a full, satiating, super healthy, vitamin-packed meal. So that was what we launched with. And then we created another product called Nightcap, which is a sleep support hot chocolate powder product. You take a scoop, you add it to a mug, add hot water, and it really helps you relax, fall, and stay asleep at night. So you kind of start with Meal One, finish with Nightcap. And those are two habits that we have now been able to give you to optimize your nutrition and now your sleep. And we'll have a few more products over the days, but over the next few years. But really what wakes me up in the morning is just lifting up rocks, trying to figure out how can we be better? How can we get in front of the right people? You know, how can I continue to tell this story and tell this message and build community around commitment, habits, making great decisions? You know, yes, we sell oatmeal. Yes, we sell this sleep support. But at the end of the day, like, what I'm trying to do is get people to just understand that we get one day to put numbers up on the board. Yesterday's gone. Tomorrow's not guaranteed. So you get one day. And if you could start strong and finish strong. You start strong, paints a good picture of what the day will look like. You finish strong, you get a good shot of starting strong the next day. And so that's kind of just like how this party has unfolded for me. And I live the life. I am like, I'm the figurehead of the brand. I'm the face of the brand. And I'm going to be 44 years old. I'm in the best shape of my life. And I make these decisions, you know. And so that is what inspires me every day to get out of bed, lift up rocks, and, you know, just be as humble, but also as accessible as possible through this business.
Freaking love it, dude. Freaking love it. It's fire. Let's go, guys. Creaturesofhabit.com. It's with a K. Creaturesofhabit.com. Go check it out. Go check out michaelchernow.com as well. Anywhere else you want to send them?
Yeah, you can follow my journey at Michael Chernow on Instagram, TikTok. I'm pretty active on social media, so I've been posting very, very consistently for years now. So social media is definitely a place. If you want to follow my journey, you can do that. And one other thing that I will say, I've raised a bunch of money to sponsor anybody struggling with addiction in any form, substance addiction. If you are looking for treatment and you are struggling right now, and the only thing standing in the way of you and treatment is money, I will pay for your treatment. I have raised enough money to literally anybody listening. If you are struggling with alcohol or drug addiction and you want treatment and you cannot afford it, but you know you're ready, I will pay for it full 100%. I'll pay for your travel. I'll pay for your treatment and I'll pay for your aftercare. That is a guarantee.
Should they DM you about that?
DM me. Okay. DM me. At Michael Chernow.
All right, guys. Awesome episode today. I'm just sitting here. I forgot I was hosting. I was just sitting here enthralled in the story, man. Listen, so I apologize if I wasn't a good host today, guys. Sometimes I think you just need to move out of the way and let the story be told. And Mike, thank you so much for being here, man. I look forward to building a relationship with you, man.
Absolutely, bro.
All right, guys, you've been listening to the What Are You Made Of show live from That One Studio with your boy C-Rock and Michael Chernow. We're signing off now, and until next time, beat that one.
Music licensing reimagined.